Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a good party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, solid. Right on.
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. Something sounds funny. As always, let me try something. I don't know what's on this end. But that's all right. We'll work through it. Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Hang on. Check, check. To bring some love and get here today. Well, it's, I think it might be my headphones. Let's see. Plug that in. With brutality. Front one, first one. Talk to me, sister, so you can see. First one.
We're watching
because the other one wasn't working. Okay. All right. There it is. Okay. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, how you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing all right. Better than our sound system was there for a minute.
Man,
Houston, we have liftoff.
You know.
Speaking of Houston, we have liftoff. That spacecraft hasn't been fired off yet.
No, but it's going to be going off. Is it Saturday morning?
Well, that's what they said, right?
Yeah, you know, Sandy.
You understand how we've had a space station up there. We've been inhabiting the space station with American people right up until this year. You know how they've been getting up there and back?
Russia flights.
Yeah.
I know. It's because I think it was on then President Barack Obama that he kind of, you know, pulled back on NASA and the investment in that. And I remember when he made the decision, he was saying that too many other things.
Well, there is the triage, you know, like I've been saying. We got to start figuring out what this household can afford and what our priorities are. And, you know, going to the moon is a fantastic thing. And being able to wage war on three fronts maybe isn't such a fantastic thing. And $800 billion aimed in the military direction might not be. I'm just saying we've got to start figuring out what we can do and what we can't do and where we should stick our nose and where we shouldn't.
Sandy, it is a time for excitement, as people say. I'm kind of excited about, you know, the fact that we're going to be inhabiting the moon at some point in time. I don't know how much is going to be of that in my lifetime. But clearly, you would have thought by now, going back to 50 years ago, that we were on the moon, you would have thought by now that we would have probably gotten a lot further.
Well, I think you have to figure out, exploration happens because people are have wanderlust, want to find out what's out there, but usually it also happens because there's a purpose and a value from it.
Some minerals, maybe?
Well, minerals, or gold. I mean, yeah. Columbus, all these people were looking for something of value when they set sail and took their risks. And it could be that from the standpoint of value, actual value, commercial value, there isn't that much at this point that's been identified about going to the moon. And you know, and the idea of transporting minerals, heavy minerals, back from the moon is probably pretty hard to figure out. So there's a lot to figure out before we actually can determine that there's value, commercial value, in terms of going to all these places.
So clearly, at the root of it, you believe that it's commercial value that they're looking for.
Well, you got to. I mean, if you're going to do something, it's an investment. You can do it in an investment in science, and one trip or two trips to the moon maybe gets as far as you need to get in terms of breakthroughs in science, or how many trips to Mars. But once you start doing it frequently, it's because there's a purpose and a value.
For the listening audience, we're going to be joined in the 9 o'clock hour by Governor Tony Evers. And, second time in the last couple of weeks that we've had the governor call in. And so I'm really excited about the fact that the Governor Evers is going to be appearing once again on our radio station, and especially on the Earl Ingram Show. Sandy, you talked about, I wanted to talk a little bit, a lot of things we're going to talk about today, so I wanted to begin with the water crisis that's happening in Mississippi, in Jackson, Mississippi, Sandy. And, you know, we sometimes forget that there are rural areas in our nation that aren't just up to par with the cities and people who live in rural areas. Sometimes get the short end of the stick. They benefit in living in rural areas. Clearly, you're away from all of the people and sometimes all of the trouble that you see and that occurs
far from the maddening crowd.
Right. Yeah. but there's some trade-off, right?
Sure there is. And, you know, the infrastructure is way different. The more rural you get, and a lot of, you know, if you get really rural, you have a septic tank and a well, and you're sort of off the grid other than maybe electrical. And there have been big federal rural electrification programs to try and extend electricity out to the rural areas. And if you can go to Wyoming and places like that and see that all they've got is satellite discs, and they aren't very interconnected to the grid other than that way. So, yeah, I mean, The less dense the population, the less probably advanced the infrastructure development is. But and what's going on in Mississippi isn't just about rural. It's really about an infrastructure system like water, and whether that water system is designed to deal with the kind of stresses that we're now seeing with climate change and flooding. So with massive flooding, the water systems can be invaded by floodwaters, and suddenly you've got floodwaters flowing through pipes, and the water you get isn't potable anymore. That's what they're getting.
Sandy, in Jackson, Mississippi, for at least the third time in a dozen years, portable toilets are parked outside the ornate Mississippi Capitol because Jackson's water system is in crisis. Third time. And so you figure there's something that needs to be repaired there, right? I mean, there's some system that is not working. And so the third time inside of a dozen years lets you know that there's something massive that must be.
Well, there is something happening to municipalities generally that relates to their capacity, I guess their revenue capacity, to deal with the things that need to be dealt with. I mean, you can take Milwaukee County, which was famous for its park system. And those parks were all developed in the 20s and 30s and magnificently famous across the country. And yet now we can't afford to maintain them. And almost all the parks are maintained not by taxpayers, but by friends of the zoo,
right,
and friends of Lake Park and friends of Washington Park. And so they've been offloaded from the tax structure because we don't apparently have the political appetite and the revenue structure that allows us to finance them and maintain them. And the same thing has happened to our infrastructure. Roads, you know, we had to have a big federal bill passed to try and have our roads catch up, and now when you try to get from here to there, you realize that all of our roads apparently need fixing because they're all getting fixed at once.
Yeah, you know, Sandy, we do know. I know in the city of Milwaukee and other places, bridges that when I was a kid that I used to walk under in different parts of the city that used to be safe, you look at them crumbling. And so I'm afraid to even go under them. They're train tracks and trains.
Yeah.
And we know that these are areas that are frequently traveled. We see them crumbling before our eyes.
You know, I think it's a testament to two things. One, I don't think construction quality is what it used to be. You know, there are bridges that were built in the 20s that are still intact and still working. And the Hone Bridge, which was built during our adult lifetime, started falling apart within 20 years. So I think there was something about the engineering and construction techniques that is wanting in today's world. And we've had evidence around Milwaukee that parking structure, the O'Donnell parking
yes.
structure, with a fatality. And also just neglect. You know, it's dangerous to walk under a bridge now because pieces of concrete might fall on you.
Well, that's absolutely correct. So my point is that we had a system that was in place. Maybe we had a system that was in place that, you know, before that we maintained all those things. Today, maybe that system is still there, just no resources.
Well, I think the revenue base, based on property taxes as it is for localities, is a very difficult taxing source. It puts a strain on people to elevate taxes, and it just isn't. It hasn't been. In a situation in which a municipality is not growing rapidly, we should understand that Milwaukee County built its parks back in a time when it was growing at a very rapid clip, and growth makes it much easier to spend money. Because the money, the revenue stream is increasing year on year, naturally, based on the growth. In a situation where municipalities are all static in size or shrinking, and where there might be losing tax base, the situation turns around on its head, and you're underwater very quickly.
You know, Sandy, but in this case in Jackson, Mississippi, and really as you look all over the nation, lakes drying up. And all of those things, again, you attribute that to climate change. There are people who are still pushing against that notion that that's not the case, that's not true.
Well, CJ told us that it's just the end of an ice age and that human beings have nothing to do with it. Well, I don't think that's true. Science doesn't support that, at least all the current scientific studies. But regardless of its cause, it's happening, and we better start dealing with it on both sides. We better start trying to slow its pace, and we better get ready for the costs and expenses associated with adjusting to it.
You know, we're really at a point, Sandy, right now where these are critical junctures, critical times, critical decisions that have to be made by our government. And our government doesn't seem to be up to the task right now because of all the separation in it. But at some point in time...
Well, you know, ever since Grover Norquist and before that Ronald Reagan, since government became the enemy and the problem, when we have problems, it's harder for us to come to grips with the fact that it's the government that has to step forward and solve it. And because of Grover Norquist and the refusal to raise taxes at any point, and the notion that starving government could help it go away, it's a little bit like starving a tumor and getting rid of it. When you decide that government is the cancer, well, then you use chemotherapy to make it incapacitated. And in many respects, government did get incapacitated. We found that out. Our FEMA is not very good any longer at dealing with disasters. And all of our government has become less capable than it was. And people want to blame government for that. And what they really should do is blame the fact that we have starved government of the money necessary to keep it capable.
You know, Sandy, you look out west, there's always been fires. But what we are seeing now, if it's any sign of what's coming in the future, all this stuff has to be rethought. And whatever the reasoning was that we weren't willing to do what was necessary to make our government strong and responsible for things that our citizens need, we got to hurry up and fix that.
Well, also, California, the fires and all that is another reflection of humans in denial. We're in denial about climate change, and there have been people all along who've been in denial about where they should build their houses and
right.
take what risk, build in the floodplain, what the hell, sure. Build where there are mudslides, yep. Build next to forests where there'll be forest fires, okay. So, you know, there's been a lot of that, too.
Yeah. Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show with Sandy Williams. We'll be back.
Dirty computer walking by. If you look closer, you'll recognize I'm not that special. I'm broken inside, crashing slowly. The bugs are in me.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, there is another phenomena going on right now where Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, is shipping migrants to New York, to Chicago, to other places, other big cities across the nation in a protest that the government is not doing their due diligence to stop the flow of illegals across the nation. What is your thought on him then shipping those people to different cities across the nation?
Well, I guess it's kind of a physical manifestation and proof that politics uses people as pawns. I mean, you know, these are human beings, right?
Right.
And they're just being used as pawns. You know, it is probably true that the problem of immigration in the United States in vast numbers is more impactful on the border states. Although the border states have long had time to prepare themselves and to understand the problems, and they've gleaned the advantages from the problem as well. I mean, you know, the workforce, workforce and just the available labor. Let's not label it cheap, but let's just describe it as available and ready and willing. And that ready and willing and available workforce has been much more numerous in California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. And that has been an advantage, they've realized. So now to try and ship off to other cities and states what they perceive to be the problem strikes me as disingenuous. And furthermore, just playing politics with people. I just think that the politicians from Texas and elsewhere have been just as big a problem in terms of coming up with a bipartisan solution. Ever since George Bush II, there's been an extensive effort among some politicians, at least, to get their arms around and come up with a meaningful and workable and satisfactory solution to the numbers of immigrants that want to come into the United States from Mexico. Because obviously there is a problem associated with processing a very large number of them, but that has turned itself on its head with now this movement that wants to basically cut off the flow of immigrants coming from Mexico when everyone close to it understands that it's an advantage, not a disadvantage, if handled correctly.
You know, Sandy, yeah, they come through Mexico, but they're They're from all over Central America, many of them. And so it's our policies, Sandy, and those nations are at the root of it.
Well, I mean, our policies are definitely have contributed to the problems in the Dominican Republic and all these other countries from whence they are coming, Guatemala, Costa Rica, and Dominican Republic, you know, many. But and then it's been our lack of coming up with a reasonable policy for dealing with them at the door. And just a recognition of the fact that we are a country that has always accepted immigrants who are coming from a place of less and coming to a place where they want more. I mean, you know, when the Irish immigrants were moving into America in great numbers, they were coming from an Ireland that was in a very sorry state. And the same is true of most of the countries from whence our forebearers came.
You know, Sandy, the other side of it is, and at some point in time, the American people have to realize these people aren't going to stop coming until something happens in their countries.
Yeah.
And so why is it that we don't make some effort, and whatever it's going to cost? I mean, I shouldn't say whatever it's going to cost. You've got to do something to make their countries
I suppose in some respects that would be America running around telling people how to operate. But what we could do is we could stop doing the things that make their places we have helped create the negative circumstances, which is further evidence of what I've been talking about, which is us sticking our nose where it doesn't belong. And the result of that, instead of being an improvement in the condition in those countries for the people, has been a disintegration of the experience for those people.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, we have backed dictators and autocrats. We've backed commercial interests, which have run contrary to the interests of the people in their country. I mean, we've done quite a few things to cause problems. We should stop causing problems.
You know,
the immigrants to our country are much more numerous from the war zones that we've created. We have lots of Afghani immigrants now. We have many Iraqi immigrants.
You know, Sandy, and my thing is, if the American people, enough of the American people, really understood what was at the root of people traveling across a desert with only the clothes on their backs, that, you know, there's something going on when people get in a semi-trailer, 200 of them,
right,
with no air, no water. But there's something going on in their nations. We can't say as a people.
And they certainly are not coming, as Lou suggested, to come here and attack and undermine this nation as terrorists.
Yeah. Or to vote Democrat.
They aren't coming for that purpose at all.
Yeah, and so we just have to see. We just have to understand that this is something that long term we've got to face as a country, and, you know, otherwise we're not going to ever stop this. You can build as many walls as you want to build. People who want a better shot at life are going to figure out a way to get here. I got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You can join us. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be back. You know, to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I'm looking at this article on the Hill this morning, and it's a frightening situation. But before we go there, let's go to the phone lines and Dave from Mequon. Hey, Dave, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. Really quickly, it's frustrating to hear what I'm hearing, because if you Look, what the Department of Defense did last year, June of last year, they put out a four-page letter. Biden took some of the money for the border wall, $2.2 billion, that was supposed to be, finishing the border wall. Now, there are some, I think it's Senator Kelly has been reaching out to Biden, and they're completing some of the gaps now in Arizona because they're just being overrun like crazy down there. And if you remember, the president said he wasn't going to build another foot of the wall. That being said, the money that was allocated, reallocated from the Department of Defense, they use that to build, help border walls in several other countries. That's the joke. Italy, Hungary, all these different places. And I think it shows you that in the state of California has made a commitment that anybody that breaks the law, you know, that's coming over the border illegally, they're all getting health insurance. They're getting other benefits. And meanwhile, and you mentioned this on your show, Earl, the city of Los Angeles alone has over 65,000 homeless people on the streets. So, you know, while we're talking about this, yes, there are things they're trying to come to the United States, and it's not just Central America and Mexico. They're now catching people from all over the world now at the border. It's now known that, you know, you have people from, you know, even from, Africa, and you got people from Europe and other places. They're all coming because they know, and we're actually helping the cartels. The cartels are making a lot of money on this, along with the fact that we have sex trafficking. There are young girls that are being sex trafficked.
That's a long monologue. The cartels are making money based on the fact that it's illegal. It's a bit like it's a bit like saying that Al Capone made money out of Prohibition. He did, and that was because liquor was illegal, and so running speakeasies and having illegal joints made money. So the cartels are making money out of the illegalities associated with all the transport, and that's going to happen with a wall and without a wall. We have to step back, and it's not quite, you can't simplify it down to this notion, and the notion that we've got all kinds of people coming from around the world through the Mexican gate isn't really borne out by the numbers. We do have people from around the world coming through the gate, but it isn't in vast numbers. What there is evidence that some people from around the world have decided to try and use the Mexican gate to get into the United States. That's a fair statement. But it's not a fair statement to suggest that we've got this open door in through which are coming all kinds of people from the Mideast and elsewhere around the world who apparently, based on some ethnic judgment or profile, pose greater threats to America, you know, than I don't know whom. You know, it was interesting. We had a call from, it was either CJ or Lou, who was saying talking much the way you were about all these people coming through the gate and talking about all the other countries they came from, and they listed the same ones you did. Africa, you know, it was an ethnic kind of a worry, like somehow people coming from Africa and the Mideast into the United States is something we should worry about. I guess we wouldn't worry as much if they were coming from, what, Ukraine and other places.
Well, they've been
like
catching terrorists. They've been catching some terrorists. There are known terrorists at the border as well.
Well, no.
They've been trying to penetrate.
I think it's true that there are some people on the watch list that they found, and I think the number, if some people have identified it, is something like 40 or 43, which incidentally is a very small number. And if we did the same kind of checking to figure out how many people on the watch list were coming through the Canadian border, we'd probably find out that it was at least as numerous. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of like trying to breed hysteria and fear to talk about things that might be more frightening about this. I mean, I think there's been there's been a bipartisan recognition amongst some folks since George Bush the first that there needed to be a bipartisan and omnibus kind of comprehensive reaction in American law to deal with the fact that there are very large numbers of people coming from the South who would like to get into the United States? And then how should we handle that door, and how should we process it, and how should we set up an orderly process? And so far, the parties have not been able to reach agreement, and quite frankly, the Republican Party has been just as big a part of making that impossible as the Democratic Party. And so there's a problem,
point.
But I don't think we can point it at a particular source. And I don't think that many people who watch this believe that actually the wall, by closing the fissures in the wall that currently exist, would shut down substantially the numbers of people trying to get into the country.
Well, and to blame
I want to make one more point. It should be noted that more people have died at the Mexican-U.S. border than anywhere else in the world. And that is because there are lots of dangers between, you know, with some of the rivers and obviously the very hot climate.
Well, absolutely. And that shows us how desperately these people are in an effort to leave the place where they are, which must involve misery, because they're taking these very material risks to try and get to a place of greater opportunity. And I've never heard that Mexicans or people coming through the South border, when they get to the United States, end up contributing to the levels of homelessness in this country. Quite frankly, my understanding is that what they contribute to is the labor force.
All right. Some do. Definitely.
Most do. It's not just some. The majority of them do. Yeah, you know, you can point out, you know, that there's a few bad apples in the bunch, Dave, but we got that with Americans, right? It's not just people who come from...
I think there was a lot of empirical analysis done at the time when Donald Trump was waving his arms and trying to make people believe that everyone crossing the border was a member of MS-16,
yes.
these terrible violent-ridden gangs, when in fact the level of criminality associated with the immigrants coming from the south of the border was lower than the average level of criminality amongst Americans at large. So, you know, I'm not sure that we have a criminal element crossing, or that we are increasing the criminal element in the United States by what's happening. But I don't think Earl or I would argue with the proposition that we need to come up with something that's far more orderly in terms of the way the border is handled and can be handled. But it's a problem that requires a legal analysis and reaction.
I just have a question for Sandy.
Hold on, Dave. Because our nation needs those workers, no question. All right, we gotta go, Dave. We gotta go to Tom from LA. Hey, Tom, right. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, my friend?
Good morning, Earl. Morning, Sandy. First off, we the people are the government. Second, the Republican Party is the party of pro-death and of pro-murder. I just love all of these guys. I mean, I know Wisconsin because I'm from Wisconsin. And I know Wisconsin because I listen to you guys about Wisconsin every day. How the hell these guys are such experts on the fifth largest economy in the world in Los Angeles and Southern California just astounds me. The only information they're getting is information from their Fox News and their OAN and their Max, whatever that's called. That's what they're getting, and their right wing talk hate radio. First off, California has the problem that it has with homeless. Right back to Ronald Reagan when he kicked all the people out of the insane asylums and threw them onto the streets. And we didn't have a place for these people to go. Second, there is a process that's being happening in California. We have these small little housing units. We have lots of different things that the city of Los Angeles is actually doing about it. And people like Donald Trump saying that he wants to have only certain people come to this country don't know crap about this country. The whole part of this country is that the poor, the huddled masses, came here to make something of themselves, not to come here as rich people immediately. because that's where entrepreneurship comes from. That's where competition comes from, is from the entrepreneurial spirit of the American people or the immigrants that come here. These guys think they just want to have another dynasty of another rich Saudi family moving to America and basically take it over, or someone from a white European area that's already got money, that's coming here to help teach ski lessons, I guess. These guys don't know crap. I'm sorry. You guys in Wisconsin don't know crap about immigration. First off, if you know anything about the Latino people, they are so industrious. They will take your border wall, whatever it is you want to waste my taxpayer dollars on, and they will dig a tunnel underneath this country to get to the United States if they have to. It astounds me. And you know what? There are bad people and there are good people, or positive and negative people in the world. And you quit stereotyping all Latinos, quit stereotyping all black people, quit stereotyping all gays, quit stereotyping all of the minorities that are out there, because you know what? There's a lot of us white people, too, that are good people and bad people.
Hey, Tom, man, you just hit it out of the park, man, because at the root of all of those kinds of conversations is just what you just said. You know, Sandy said it earlier. You know, it's not coincidental that, you know, they point at all these people of color from different parts of the world who come here. And to act as if everybody who comes here is a criminal, or everybody who comes here is bringing fentanyl into the country. And that's what you hear, unfortunately, far too many times from people who represent the right in this country. It's this fear factor, Sandy. It's this fear factor. You keep saying, Sandy, that people are afraid. Well, they're afraid in many instances only because they don't know.
Well, it's much easier to stoke fear in people when you stoke it about people who are different than them, right? That's what tribalism is all about. People revert to tribalism as they pull into protective shells, as they begin to be afraid of other things. And that's a time-worn and historic reaction to the onset of technological risk, of economic risk, of modernity. People retreat to a tribalistic view. They go into their caves.
And I also want to say that I'm very proud of Joe Biden last night and his speech, and I hope that all Americans get behind him. He sounded a little bit more like FDR last night, which I'm very excited about. And these guys, they don't understand California. California is the fifth largest economy in the world.
Hey, Tom.
We could go away from the United States and still survive.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much. We got to go to break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Fridays with Sandy Williams. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be back. Us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my host, Sandy Williams. Guest host, Sandy Williams. You know, I, Sandy, this is, After rolls in, women, suburban women, are surging and signing up to vote in some states. Now, I know when the decision was made by the United States Supreme Court to overturn Roe versus Wade, celebratory situations all over the nation, Republican men were all celebrating this outcome, and red states, they just assumed that also women in red states would celebrate this because pro-life is not just a male thing. There are women who also believe in pro-life. But I don't know if they expected the firestorm. I remember you saying something when that happened.
Yeah, well, I think before it happened, I was suggesting that I thought that this whole the whole reaction to Roe v. Wade was politically very effective, because you could talk about this thing and have a sort of an ideological, theoretical talk about it and get a lot of people stirred up and say, yeah, we got to get rid of this. And nobody really thought it was going to happen. It was dog chasing car. Anyone who's had a dog who likes to chase cars knows that they do it, and they'll do it every day. And they'd never really catch the car, and I'm not sure they really want to catch the car. They just want the car to, they just want to do it. And the whole anti-Roe v. Wade really was sort of a political dog chases car, and when the dog catches the car, it's got a problem. And that's really what's happened now. The dog caught the car, and now we've got the political fallout that's gonna come from that. You know, it was just 100 years ago. It's hard to believe. Just 100 years ago. It's a quarter of a century longer than we are.
Right.
That women got the vote. So women were not even entitled to be a part of the political process other than to say things about it
right.
until 100 years ago, and they're still being treated in sort of that same way. Now, what we found out in MAGA was that there are some women who will kind of follow the lead of their man in terms of the political lead, but there's an awful lot of women who have their own personal view about abortion, their own personal experience, they can project and understand the importance to a woman of being able to manage such an important decision as bearing a child, and the health decisions associated with it. And so now the dog caught the car, politically speaking, and now we're going to find out that it's not necessarily a victory at all.
Well, yeah, they resent the fact that men have made this decision for the most part, and they don't care whether it's Democrat or Republican. They just know that something that they feel they should have the right themselves of their own bodies
mm-hmm.
to make decisions without men telling them what they should do. And the Republicans are going to find this out as they celebrated this. That there's going to be the fallout from it is going to be tremendous. And with all the other things that are going on, they're wondering why all of a sudden they're not surging. Well, they're really going to see the fallout from it as more and more women, whether they're Democrat or Republican, say, listen, we're tired of men telling us what to do, right? As you stated, women, they're independent. And so whether
well it isn't they are independent they have their own
rights.
They have their own outlook, they have their own point of view. Men have a point. We each as men and women have points of view that are slightly different from one another. We find that out.
No
in
kidding.
All, in all but I mean in fact I mean you know guys their involvement in conception and child rearing is a far different experience, quite frankly, than a woman's.
Yeah, well the men, child is developed inside of the woman.
Well,
right?
and it becomes a responsibility of the woman immediately after birth in all sorts of ways, and men are now nowhere near as, you know, in fact, it takes laws associated with mandatory child support and things to actually kind of coerce men to play the role they should play if they don't voluntarily do it. So, you know, there is just an entirely different point of view associated with this whole part of being a person, being a human being. That needs to be recognized, and it's as a man, we can't really project and understand what it is to bear a child, to carry a child, to give birth to a child. All of that is stuff that we can only speculate about. And to see a bunch of men trying to take charge of that process must be entirely galling as far as women are concerned, and it should be.
You know, Sandy, and, you know, that 50 years ago when women celebrated Roe versus Wade, you know, many of those women are gone now, but they fought for it, right? And it wasn't just something that was just given to them. They fought for that, right? They got it, and now in
well, interestingly, the Roe v. Wade decision came upon the country almost in the same manner that the gay marriage decision, or the way it sort of unfolded very quickly. I remember when gay marriage several years ago suddenly was approved, and it was like a miracle, and it was a miracle that kind of descended without all the acrimony that people expected it might happen. And Roe v. Wade sort of came upon us the same way. I mean, it was clearly a festering problem, but it wasn't actually a political movement per se. It was a recognition by the courts that there was this gnawing problem that resided in the closets of society.
You know, Sandy, I don't think the Republican Party thought that it would be what it is now, the outcome of it, and what it's going to be. But they'll soon see.
Well, you know, it's really the notion that you can use social issues for political purposes to create powerful alliances. The notion that the notion of transitioning, that the sexual issues associated with sexual, not orientation, but the transitioning from male to female, the birth problems, the psychological problems, these are all human problems. And the notion that this should all be politicized and socialized and created as sources of anger and fear is crazy. You know, it's the same sort of thing as vilifying immigrants, and we vilified gays, we vilified transsexuals.
Sandy, we got to go to a break. I hate to interrupt you. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back.